Hey guys, I'm Chris.
And I'm Mike.
And welcome back to this week's No Limits, the Myth Trap Podcast. How you doing this week, Mike?
Good, Chris, but we should call it No Limits, the Myth Trap Revisited Podcast.
I know, man. We haven't done any new stuff recently. We've been going back and sort of deep diving while we get ready for Don's first book. But yeah, I'm excited today to talk to you about The Last Man.
You know, I loved The Last Man when we first covered it on the Mitrap podcast. So much so, I think, was it second on my list? I think it was second in my overall rankings.
You had it as third.
Third. Okay. What did I have second?
Behind Memorial Day and Transfer of Power.
Transfer of Power. Okay. A little nostalgia there with Transfer of Power.
Yeah, I don't know if this one rises above Transfer of Power, but...
But I'm keeping it top three for sure.
I think... So I had it fifth
because behind of Consent to Kill,
Memorial Day, Transfer of Power, and I had Lethal Agent ahead of it. I don't know if it was trying to have...
Kyle?
I wanted to have Kyle in the top four. I don't know. Like, I need to go back to that.
I'm leaving it top three. I loved it. I loved rereading this book.
No, dude, this book was, it was a breeze. It was nice to revisit these characters. This, you know, to think that this is Vince's last full novel.
Yeah.
It hits, you know, it's just like he's setting everything up. You can kind of like, if you sort of take a meta view of it and think about, all right, he probably knows this is going to be his last book, or, you know, surmises that it might be one of his last.
It's possible, yeah.
How do I want to leave my story in a good spot? And to take this bold, you know, to take this bold step and have like a mole essentially inside the CIA, have Mitch on the run, like for the first, you know, what is it, two thirds of the novel, you don't know that Rickman's bad.
Right.
There's like a little bit of inklings, like the one chapter where he gets injected, like there's like some secrecy. You can kind of like read through the lines upon reread, you can pick up on it. And like Hubbard, like seems really weird at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think about like, how did they know that Mitch was going to go to that dog play, you know, the veterinarians, like, right, ahead of time, like it would have had to have been like, you know, something that was sort of staged, right, or set up.
Yeah.
And then does switch you on a 180, do that reveal. Rickman was in on it. And then to think about like how this all then sets up the chase in the next book, because you get that hint from Rickman saying, well, you know, Durrani can't kill me. You can't kill me because I have lawyers. If I don't check in with them, I'm going to start shedding information.
Yes.
A little did we know that could go both ways. You know, if the CIA were to get him and not that he wouldn't be checking in, then yeah, he's going to start dropping information, which we're going to, you know, not that I don't know if we should go revisit The Survivor. This book made me want to then immediately go into The Survivor.
Dude. Oh my God.
But yeah, I don't find any flaws with it. Dare I say perfect in the terms of like the pacing.
It's close.
The setting.
It's real close.
The, you know, bringing in old characters of like Hurley and Louis Gould and like Mick Reavers' death and like the whole scene when you get to like, you know, Gould and interacting at the vet hospital and then like the, you know, the whole corrupt police shakedown. That whole scene is amazing, start to finish. You know, I think like the weakest part is like maybe like the Ariana Venter like side piece, which she like quickly she gets sidelined. Like it's all about like just setting up this reintegration thing, and that's what sort of pisses people off and sends us down this path. But yeah, I don't know. What else is there to, you know, say?
You just literally said it absolutely so well. And we honestly both said it so well on episodes 71 and 72 of this feed. I listened back to those in our covering of the book. We brought up all of these exact same points and we're praising how nearly perfect this book hits and how much it means. I mean, this book makes the rest of Vince Flynn's works even better because in some sense it's a culmination of them, like you said, with Louis Gould and Stan Hurley, who's a somewhat recent character. You know, he was only around the last couple of books that Vince wrote. But then it also makes Kyle Mills's books better. Like, this is the key, the linchpin to decode so much about this series, so much about who Rap is post Anna's death. That's unpacked here in this book. So much about what Kyle needed to do to pick up the clues from Vince is unwrapped in this book, and Kyle did that perfectly with The Survivor and beyond. We even get clues here about what Kyle's going to do books later in Enemy at the Gates. Mm-hmm. You know, the Mike Nash stuff comes into play here. So it's like the perfect blend right here of Vince and Kyle. Each of their bodies of works is made better knowing about what happens in this book. It's just so meta to think about how much power this book holds for unlocking two different authors, multiple books in the series, fleshing out so much about the characters while still delivering on near perfect pacing, near perfect plotting, and some of the best action sequences we've had. Like you're saying at the vet, you know, Rap gets blown up. He pulls the countertop down to cover himself. Gould comes over, turns himself in seconds before shit hits the fan, saving everybody's life. Gould's on the rooftop about to kind of escape. Who is it, Scott or Maz pulls him back and says, you got to operate with me, cover over there. And they're just shooting out from behind this parapet, operating perfectly. And dude, let's not overlook this fact. This book is also through and through an Irene Kennedy book.
Yeah.
Irene rises above in this book. If she wasn't our winner last time, she's my winner this time. She delivers on so many levels. And my favorite one is when she goes in to talk to Gould, where Mike Nash is like, you need backup in there, or I'm coming in with you. I can't get him to talk. And Kennedy has the ace up her sleeve. And it's such an Irene Kennedy move to do. It's such a Thomas Stansfield move to do. One of my favorite moments. You just want to stand up and applaud as soon as Kennedy pulls that out, which, as I just said, enriches what Kyle gives to us, because Kennedy knew Claudia was an important piece of the puzzle. You could use Claudia not only as leverage to hurt Gould, you can use her as leverage to help the team. Somehow down the road, cultivating a relationship with this woman and Louis Gould's kid is going to be important. And she even says at one point, when Louis's like, why are you giving me these opportunities and whatnot? She's like, you still have a role to play. It's not clear to me what it is. It's almost like this omniscient understanding that she has. She can just see beyond what's here and now, what's in front of her. And then she can start calculating and using that brain of hers to figure out what that divine plan is and do the best she can to manipulate that plan, you know, or work with that plan to get people to do what she needs and ultimately to protect her people and her team. And I just think hats off to Irene in this book.
Yeah. And I think it, after reading this and like thinking about what you just said, I think it makes total sense why Kyle would have wanted to reincorporate Claudia into the story.
Yes.
And, you know, we haven't even mentioned that, like, essentially, Rap loses his memory for part of this novel and slowly has to work to rebuild it back.
Yeah.
Has like some funny scenes that, like, you know, rarely do we see some of these, you know, quirks with Vincent's writing. This is way more reminiscent of like where Kyle took the, you know, the humor. You know, with the whole, like, do we sleep? Are we Anita? You know, like, remember when the with his Cindy new the yeah. Cindy Hayek, she comes in and is like, are we sleeping together? Like, you know. Yeah.
That could have almost been the loser of the book. Not that scene, because that scene was excellent, but the memory loss thing, he almost snaps out of it too quickly and remembers too quickly.
Yeah, I'm going to push back.
I don't think
it's too quickly. I think, like, it's, he slowly starts to remember. And I think, like, what's most important about, like, the reason why you set that up is because the last person he saw right before he loses his memory is the person who killed his wife.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you know, it gives you this added element of, like, all right, we don't know what the hell he's going to do
right
when he sees Louis Gould again.
Yeah.
And Louis Gould obviously has a role to play because, one, why was he there?
Someone hired him. Yeah.
You know, someone hired him. His banker's involved somehow. His handler's involved somehow. So you're going to have to let Mitch interact with him. Like Irene even like contemplates like even like bringing it, like when to bring this up.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that slow, you know, sort of, you know, we even get like the scenes with the doc, right? And like how, wait, and then slowly he's remembering, like, wait, I think I told you not, you're not allowed to write notes. And he's like, oh, good, good. You remember.
Yeah, I was testing you.
He like tears it out. I was testing
you. Yeah, it's very good. And also he says some things want to be kept private when the doc presses him on Greta Olmeyer.
Yes,
Greta Olmeyer. And shuts it down. That kind of helps us with the kill shot problem where Rap just says, no, doc, that's off limits to everybody.
Yeah.
Including us, the audience. We don't need to know. Rap's declaring off limits.
And I think it does one of two things. It allows Vince to, I don't know, walk down memory lane himself, you know, if truly this is what he wanted to do, but it's a literary tool to allow him to get catharsis to like, you know, end his story or like tell his story in a way that he can reminisce, he can build momentum. I think Rap becomes like a little bit of a different man.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
He does.
I think like by reliving the trauma and having to cope with it so quickly again.
Yeah.
I think he's the same, but it's slightly different. And then, so yeah, you throw all that into this novel and it's just like, I could see how you would say that that's almost like the loser of the book, but I think he nailed it well enough that it's not a loser.
Yeah. And I'd say the same thing with the Ariana Vintner stuff. Let's say that was the loser as you proposed. Again, maybe it's the closest to the loser, but it allows another gem of a scene, which is a hallmark of Vince, and he's going out on a high here. It's usually a committee room in front of Congress, but this time it's that closed door meeting with Vintner and other people at the DOD and state working on the reintegration plan. When Mitch gives it to her, it is nearly perfect. So as much as that storyline is, you know, give or take, it does set up the reintegration stuff, one. But two, it allows us to have a classic boardroom, meeting room, Vince Flynn style scene, and Mitch delivers. When Ariana Vintner is with that other guy, I think he's a corporal or captain or something. I don't even know what his rank was, but he's like the assistant and he's just trying to get in Vintner's pants all the time. Rap picks up on that in their body language. And he's like, you're sleeping with this guy over here. So what about your husband who finds out you're probably ready to divorce him? You know, he's probably a cuck. And Rap just gives it to this lady. And then she asks Rap, do you think I'm stupid or do you think I'm an idiot? And Rap's like, I don't have enough information. You haven't started talking yet. And then she goes off and he raises his hand. He's sitting there raising his hand. And she's like, are you raising your hand? He goes, yes, I'm waiting to be called on. She calls on him and he goes, I've heard enough. You're an idiot.
Great line.
It's great, perfect. Line.
Yeah, no, and it gives us, it's like the best version, one of the best versions of like, we've seen it time and time again where Rap is in a room giving a talk. But if you juxtapose it against the previous revisited novel we did in, what is that, Pursuit of Honor?
Yep.
Like complete 180 in difference.
It's night and day. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have to think about like, there was two other books published in between those two books, even though chronologically they exist back to back.
But he starts and ends with a great one of those scenes because Transfer of Power, Mitch is really first introduced with the Chiefs of Staff, with General Flood.
Right.
And now he's going out in this meeting, mouthing down to Vintner. I just think that's a perfect way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Another time Rap is classic Rap is right in the opening, dude. The way he dresses down Zahir, that police commander, former Taliban. Yes. I love the way this book opens. That is coming in hot with a crime scene. And the little bits of the crime scene are going to be like a whodunit, you know, along the way. And so that's a lot of fun with like where the blood is and what the blood trail is like away from the safe and which kind of gun it was. All those bits and pieces are sprinkled throughout as it reveals Rickman was the mastermind behind his own abduction. And we get this Zahir character trying to play both sides. Again, Vince is doing what he does, building a backstory for this guy Is he with the Taliban? Is he helping us out? He even asks Mitch, you know, how much are you going to pay me to be an informant to help you? And Mitch is like, nothing. I'm shoving a Hellfire missile up your ass. Like, it's just classic Vince, again, creating these characters and bringing us right into the scene by knowing exactly who they are, what they stand for, and watching Mitch do everything we want to be done to people like that.
Yeah, and he also comes into play later on with the whole memory loss thing, because immediately, you know, or closely after waking up and gaining some of it, some of his memory back, he's thrust right back into the action and has to call this guy and talk to him. And like, and there's another funny thing we get, like, I said that? I said that to that? Like,
Softy Mitch. Softy Mitch. Like,
okay, all right. And then, but as soon as that phone call happens,
he's back.
He's back, you know?
Yep.
And I just think it shows like the essence of what makes Mitch Mitch, like what he can do, what he's good at is both one, getting shots like and taking them, which we see in his book, but also being a good operator in the sense of like knowing some spy stuff. We don't often see Mitch do like spy stuff, like, you know, the subterfuge stuff, but he is a master at manipulating, at coercing, at getting information out of people, getting people to do what he wants them to do. You know, he berates this guy down, but brings him back up, you know, hangs him with a lifeline, with his life, essentially. You know, and then later on, he says we'll give him some money for helping out. So it's, I do would agree with you, this opening, this set us here is great. And yeah, like, not only do we have Rickman's gone, but like, all right, we have literally this whole whodunit, you know, like that's what Hayek's brought in to do this like investigative, you know, because she's FBI background. Mitch is like sort of questioned. You can feel that Mitch feels that something's not right. Something doesn't sit well with him from the very first chapter. Like, this doesn't seem like what it is. And so like those are the little hints that you can pick up on reread when you like, you know, sort of piece it all together and can see like earlier than the reveal that, oh, this was actually coming, you know, a little bit of foreshadowing.
Sydney Hayek, great character. I want her back.
So what do you think about the other FBI character in the book, and Joel Wilson?
Yeah. And oh, he's got a history with Hayek, which is not a good one.
He
tries to kind of play Mr. Nice Guy when he needs her, but he was obviously abusing her when they were in a relationship. Again, another Irene Kennedy winner of a scene. In the hospital, when she confronts Wilson, a winner of a scene. But no, I kind of like Joel Wilson and why he's in here, because he kind of gave me that pause of, oh, wait, maybe he's the guy who's going to cut through the red tape, and maybe he's going to do whatever it takes to investigate. And but then he's just an asshole and a jerk. And you realize Samuel Hargraves, who's in charge, is actually trying to be a good leader here. And it's Joel Wilson ignoring him or disobeying orders that allows the terrorists to infiltrate our system, right? Because they're playing Senator Ferris. Senator Ferris is playing right into their hands by finding a guy in the FBI to do his dirty work. But it's all under the guise of the system's broken, right? They're selling to people. The system's broken. Everybody's corrupt. So you can't work within the system. You have to, you know, you basically have to become your own kind of asset, you know, working around your bosses in the FBI, guys like Hargraves, or even FBI Director Miller, who's brought in, right? The ultimate boss here. Yet Joel Wilson and Senator Ferris think they're better than that. And Wilson's being used. Ferris is using him. Ferris is being used by Rickman and associates and Durrani. And it's all like how our upper echelons of government get penetrated. And I really like seeing that play out, because this is essentially an intelligence op against us to try to break us down from the inside, corrupting a senator, sending him false information. He's being ruthless by going around people's backs to get this investigation started by Wilson. Like, this is bad news. And Kennedy's up against this, meanwhile, in the dark most of the time. But, you know, they win in the end. They bring him down. And I love how a reason they bring him down is because Scott Coleman is willing to do whatever it takes, including bugging the dog of an FBI agent. Really cool. And he even bugs it to listen to a private conversation in a car with a sitting senator. If he and Kennedy are not willing to take those drastic measures, we'll never get the evidence to stop these guys. I thought that was really cool. Scott Coleman willing to do that, which necessarily means Mike Nash was not willing to do it and play dirty. What did you think of that?
Well, first I wanted to say, I think this is also quintessential Vince, like going back to the early days, transfer power, Stu Garrett.
Yep.
Senator Hank Clark, like giving us these congressman, senator, politician side stories, B plots, we call them early on.
Yes.
That they're the actual villains, you know, even though they're being manipulated, like, you know, they are doing harm.
They're driving.
And, you know, driving it on. So to see that come back, because we've kind of gotten away from that a little bit.
You're right.
With some of these Vince novels. And so to bring that back in his last novel, again, just one more point. But yeah, I picked up on that. I also picked up on, you know, the whole, they go into the backstory about like why Mike is not on Mitch's team anymore. And, you know, why he, when he's coming over, he's going to be calling the shots because he's technically Mitch's boss and because he outed him. And like, you know, they're like, you're the war hero now. Like that, kind of, you're the face of the, so that, you know, there's some distrust there. You can, again, I think we pointed this out when we did the Enemy of the Gates pod. There's clear signs of like, you know, one, Kennedy is distancing herself a little bit from Mike while elevating him. Like, you know, I guess the trust is
different roles
eroding. It's like, it's just like she can't use him the way that she used to. So now she has to rely on Scott.
Exactly. She knows that he has to play a different role. He has to not be involved in some of this black ops spooky stuff because he has to be that bridge between the CIA and the Hill. He's eventually going to be the public figure who can get Irene what she needs while not being involved in the dirty operations she has to have her fingerprints on. You know, his fingerprints can't be on those operations because he has to curry favor with the politicians, with the public. And you can't do that if you're also the one pulling the trigger, you know, and like Irene, you know, assassinating VP, president-elect kind of in the Oval Office. Like, you can't be doing those kinds of tricks. And so those seeds are planted here for what Kyle would grow into the complex psychological profile that is Mike Nash, and how that relationship between Nash and Kennedy, Nash and Coleman, Nash and Rapp is going to fracture. And we're seeing that begin here. I mean, just listen to this. This is the conversation that Kyle definitely must have had his finger on, had the pulse of when he wrote Enemy at the Gates. Mike says, "So if you don't think you can keep your temper in check, then I think you should take off." Anger flashed across Rapp's face, so much that Nash took a step back. Rapp said, "Let's be clear about something. I know you have a fancy new title and a nice office at Langley, but you are not in my chain of command. You're Irene's message boy, and I personally couldn't give a fuck what you think. If Irene wants me here, then I'll act like a good soldier. I'll follow her orders, but I don't need your personal input or Darren Sickles or anyone else's for that matter." Nash was used to Rapp's rough edges, but there was something more to this. The two men had been in plenty of heated arguments over the years, but there seemed to be some genuine animosity this time, as if Rapp now thought they were on opposite sides.
Wow.
Nash took a long breath and said, "You've never been one to follow orders, and I sure as hell don't see why you'd start now. Very funny, big man. I'm really not in the mood for your shit, and I'll play your game, but I'm warning you. That idiot Sickles better watch himself, or I'm coming across the table." Dude, Vince even writes, Rapp now thought they were on opposite sides, and Nash says, "You're not one to follow orders, Mitch." Nash is eventually going to say, "I was just following orders with the cook stuff."
Yeah.
And it, dude, like, it's all right here. Anybody who didn't see it and didn't like Enemy at the Gates, it's all right here in the final words that Vince wrote.
Yeah. No, it's for anyone out there, again, I'm going to say this for a thousandth time. Anyone out there that says why, like, they can't believe how Enemy at the Gates could happen, it's all there. Just go back. Reread these novels. It's clearly foreshadowed. Vince wanted it. You know, if Vince wasn't going, like, maybe he wasn't going that exact same route, he was going to go some sort of route with them, with this coming to a head. So.
Yep. Yes, it is. Okay. Can we maybe transition here?
Sure.
We've already reviewed this book. It's almost 2 hours of content. Like I said, episode 71, 72. Can we spend a few minutes here, Chris, talking about what the heck is Don Bentley going to have to do to get us to this point where Rap is on the ground in Afghanistan. We have a cold open here of Rap coming in, jacking up this general dude. What did it take for Rap to get here? I mean, there's some hints, but we're going to be in the dark about Don Bentley's plot for capture or kill.
Yeah, so coming off the last novel and then going into this one, there's an entire story that's going to take place between the two. I'm super intrigued about this. And has to involve bin Laden.
Yeah.
I'm imagining, you know, is it going to involve anybody either in Iran, either in Pakistan? Like, you know, I feel like Pakistan's got to, like, play a role because that's where they caught the dude.
Right.
So, it's intriguing. Like, what do you think he has to do to get us to this point?
So, that's tough because here's a minor gripe about something. And tell me if this is valid or not. Maybe it's because we just read Protect and Defend. We had Ashani, listen to these names, Ashani in, what was it, the IGRC or somewhere in Iran, who was kind of a back channel to Irene Kennedy. They were even meeting together when Kennedy gets taken and all that. He ultimately comes into Langley and is going to play nice with the CIA. And he's our guy in Iran, right? So he's kind of that figure who's sympathetic to us, but is, you know, a patriot to his own country, but sees a relationship with America as a positive thing for Iran's development. Now you have Ashan, not Ashani, but Ashan.
This was confusing me.
This is confusing. And Ashan is almost the exact same thing in Pakistan. In the ISI. He's fighting the Pakistani hardliners who don't want to play ball with America, who want to piss us off, and, you know, who actually were harboring bin Laden. Like, Ashan does say he did his own report, kind of off the books, investigation into the bin Laden stuff, and he found the ISI culpable. He directly found Durrani and the Pakistani intelligence services knowingly held bin Laden, harbored bin Laden, and protected him. But that got covered up because Durrani, Taj, and all these guys played hardball and covered that up. There was even a cover-up about President Musharraf, the assassination attempt that he mentions. So Ashan is like this guy on the inside, knows a relationship with us is valuable, doesn't believe the corrupt people who are siding with the terrorists are best for his country, and he's forming a back channel with us. Is it not almost the exact same thing as Ashani and Ashan? I wonder if we're set up to be confused by that, because I don't know. That's a tough thing to navigate there. If you bring up one or both of these characters in the book, I could just see right now the Facebook group getting a bunch of posts of, who is Ashan? What book was he in? Is he the guy from Iran? No, that's Ashani. Ashani sounds like Ashan. Are they the same person? And I'm like, is this going to be sticky territory?
Yeah, but you're very right. They are essentially the same character, different different locations, different organizations, but they serve the same purpose, to be that,
right,
you know, the one true light in the corrupt organization that's going to, like, have an interaction. I feel like Ashani had a little bit more active integration with Irene Kennedy, you know, like, actively tries to get her back, like, obviously, like, gives up all the names, the phone numbers, you know, that kind of stuff. Here, Ashan is just, in the end, he's a scapegoat.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see if he comes back, because I know that Taj plays a big role as the main villain in the next book. So I can't remember if Ashan is in The Survivor. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't know enough about native Pakistani and Iranian names to know if those are just common names.
No, me neither. Sure. But I guess my bigger point is Don Bentley clearly, and the synopsis we got for Capture or Kill mentions Ashani, and it talks about Iran and a Quds Force demonstration. And it's like, he's going to be the back channel with Kennedy. Yet this is also coming a book before Ashan plays a big role in Pakistan. And there's the bin Laden stuff. It's just like, there's Iran and Ashani stuff. And then there's Pakistan stuff with bin Laden. Do we not mention Ashan? Because we have Ashani, we don't mention Ashan.
Yeah, that's going to be hard.
That's tricky. I think you just ignore the Ashan stuff.
Do we have a book with both of them in it?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think the Pakistan Ashan stuff from The Last Man isn't going to come up in Capture or Kill.
Do we see Durrani?
You might see Durrani, though. So,
yeah, but...
Because yeah. Durrani is hiding bin Laden.
Right.
Hashan told us that. He told us his investigation was that. He knows Durrani was doing that.
Yeah, that's what I'm interested in. Like, which characters... Do we see a Joe Rickman? That'd be intriguing.
I honestly think we might. Because he's spreading the money around.
Yeah.
Like, even if he's just, like, paying some people off and... do we see Rickman, you know, interacting with Mitch? Mm. That's interesting. I don't know. Does Rickman give some intel to Mitch, or they work on the ground together? And that's how Rap figures out about the Abbottabad complex?
Do we get the conversation that ultimately led to Rick wanting to kill Mitch?
Yeah, that weird turn. Do we have something happen in the search for bin Laden that convinces Rickman to turn Mitch on Rap and Irene? Yeah. Or to turn on America, essentially.
Yeah, to turn on America. Yeah.
To
yeah.
get into Durrani's pockets and ally with him.
He seemed like a patriot. Like, why? That's the one like thing that always confused me.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, all right, he wants the money, he wants to get out. But this dude seemed like the ultimate patriot. Like, you know, he's just really smart. So
if you don't show Rickman's turn to get in bed with Durrani, I don't know how you then bring in the bin Laden stuff. Knowing what we know from The Last Man, I don't know how you ignore that or don't show that. Like, or maybe that's the point, right? Like, Rap and the Americans are trying to find bin Laden, and Joe Rickman has all the cards, but for some reason holds it back.
Mm.
And Rap has to kind of find bin Laden himself, even though Joe Rickman could have been helpful and an ally, and there's some spat over that or division over that. I don't know. I just think that's really tricky. Like, I felt a little better reading Pursuit of Honor about where we were headed and how, at least on a psychological level, we get Mitch to where Mitch needs to be. But reading The Last Man, it's really hard to think backwards about how we end up at The Last Man.
It's much easier to go forward, but it's going to be like it could either be a super awkward jump from this novel. Again, another intriguing reason why would you want to go back and do this? But I feel like it's hard.
Louis Gould, is there any chance we see him getting back in the game? Because it says he started taking hits and he was starting up this company. And it's kind of neat. He would use his skill set to take on clients who want someone to access their vulnerabilities. So he would put together packages for assassinations, but he wouldn't pull the trigger. He'd instead sit down and show people and organizations their vulnerabilities and how he would have hit them. Like, that's kind of a neat role. And then how does he ultimately get to the place where he does accept the package? It says he went to a hotel room in the UAE in Jumeirah. There was a package waiting for him with a cell phone, $3 million, and said, "All we're going to tell you is you're hitting an American official in Afghanistan." And this was 2 weeks ago before he attempted to take the shot. So 2 weeks before The Last Man takes place. Is there somehow an opportunity there? Probably not. But what's Louis Gould doing throughout this book, you know?
What would you rather have as like an epilogue? Like Louis Gould going to this hotel room?
The package,
Getting the package, you know, we just get like he checks in and we get, you know, whatever. Or like Joe Rickman taking his dog to the vet or something like that. Just like not even mentioning like, and just, you know, it's like a treat for readers, you know?
Yeah, that's really good. Or even building that complex. They use that guy, the American contractor guy. Mm, I think he's like an energy consultant, and Durrani becomes friends and neighbors with him. But they secretly want to kill him to let Rickman use his identity. Recruiting that guy would be cool. Oh, the vet would be great because the whole vet story was made up. You know, they actually went to a vet, but they never, you know, the vet said,
"Hey, the dog wasn't sick."
No, he said, "Go to the Kabul hospital. I can't see what's wrong. I can't treat you." Yet Rickman started telling people they put the dog down.
Yeah.
And spreading the lie that the doctor did it. Yeah. Ooh. I think the Gould one would be really good, but I just don't know how it connects to capture or kill. Unless
it's, it reminds me of like, if you could put like stingers in books, you know, like, you know, you, you watch these Marvel movies and
yes,
like at the end of Captain America, there's just Thor's hammer like falls in the middle of the thing,
or Nick Fury comes out. Remember the first one with Nick Fury? Yeah,
something like that.
Was that Iron Man? Did they do that in the first one?
Iron Man. It was Iron Man.
That was the first one. Wow. Yeah, I think that'd be really cool. I think there is an opportunity if Gould is assessing people's vulnerabilities. If someone like contacts him about, hey, we have a high value target that we're trying to protect and we want to build a complex for them and we want to have security protocols so nobody can get at this person, how would you do it? And like Gould is advising some anonymous organization on how to hide a protectee. That would be kind of neat.
Yeah. There's a lot you can do. Be super intriguing to see what Don does, let alone what the story is, but these little nuances to like connect to both the pre-book and the post-book. We might not get any of it, but it's nice to sort of prognosticate or, you know, guess.
You know, it would be an interesting one. Stan's cancer news.
Oh, if he goes to the doctor, Stan goes to the doctor.
Something like that. Or we see, I think it was Nash, tell Mitch the news.
That was intense.
In Afghanistan. Really intense. So Nash obviously knew, which means Kennedy obviously knew. Do we ever see Stan breaking the news to Kennedy? Because that's got to be a moment, knowing their relationship. It's like a granddaughter to him.
You just get like a quick one-liner about like, I'll be dead in 6 months, so let me smoke, you know?
Yeah.
When they're all like drinking.
We get a lot of that here.
Drinks. Yeah.
We get a lot of that here, but seeing where that begins when he first tells Irene. Oof. I don't know, man.
Don has his work cut out.
Yeah, he sure does. He sure does. Well, Don, if you ever need two Mitch Rapp nerds to dig in deep and find some old clues and connections for you, you know, think I might know a guy.
Might know two guys.
You know, it's like if you ever wondered, what was Joel Wilson's driver name? You know, the guy who drove Joe Wilson around who was in the FBI. Oh, that was Cal Patterson. Duh.
I know, you're typing out these names of characters and I'm like, wait, who the fuck are these people?
What's the name of Joe Rickman's dog? Oh, you mean Ajax?
I knew that.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if you asked me, I don't know if I would have known the answer, but when you said Ajax, I was like, oh yeah, that's Ajax. Yeah.
If I didn't reread this book, I would have never remembered that.
So in grad school, we would have these trivia nights at the student union. Yeah. And so I wrote all these, I hosted a couple of them. So I did one for Game of Thrones. I did one for Harry Potter. I did one for Star Wars. I did one for Friends, Office, you know, nice. Et cetera. You think we could do one with our patrons for Mitch Rapp?
I smell an episode. I smell an episode coming.
There you go. We could have like a couple people on. Like I'll be the commentator or the host. We could have like you, Brian Costello, Don.
Or I'd take Mark on my team. Mark would be my first draft pick.
Yeah.
after Ryan Steck, Mark would be my next draft pick.
Yeah, I mean, if you could draft anyone, you'd probably want to draft the real books by, obviously. So, that sounds like a good episode. Well, we have nothing left to read this summer. We'll do that episode.
Well, we're kind of stacked on our reading list, Chris, for 2024. So,
yes.
One other little nugget while we're on these this deep trivia, you know what would be a cool mention? Anywhere else in the Mitch Rapp universe, whether you plug it in earlier, come back to it decades later, Sitting Bull. Sitting Bull was awesome, awesome drop in the Rickman video. That was phenomenal. How Rickman knew with one simple drop of a phrase, he can get Irene Kennedy sweating and squirming in her chair by letting out the name Sitting Bull, who's the highest asset we have inside the Russian government, who's working for us. And Rickman knew to hint at that in one of his interrogation videos, kind of under his breath where no one else would really even hear it or probably understand it. But he knew how that would upset the apple cart of the U.S. government and U.S. intelligence. That was phenomenal little thing to put in.
And it reminds me of, we have a similar situation in Brad's books in Spymaster. There's like this, the guy doesn't even know that he is the I forget his actual name, but it's like a Sitting Bull type character.
Yeah. Who's,
yeah. No, the little details with this novel, it makes it great. Definitely. I think I want to move it above Lethal Agent.
Dude, this book, if it's not in your top five, let's say it's got to be in the top 10. That's like, has to be for anybody.
It's got to be top five.
It's got to be top five. I really think you can make that argument. I'll even keep it in the three spot. So no scorecard from us here today. We talked about in our last Revisited how we're going to save the scorecard for other series. Instead, the Mitch Rapp series, they're all great, right? They're all 50 out of 50, except for Pursuit of Honor. So, and maybe Executive Power. So we're not going to do the scorecard, but we'll do these Revisited books. Who knows, Chris? Maybe we'll get through the whole series and do Revisited. But what we're going to do instead is kind of re-rank them. And I think my re-ranking here is absolutely top five, but I keep it personally in the third spot.
Yep. All right. So next time we're back on this feed, probably won't be till the book comes out. Maybe not. Maybe we'll hop back on and do The Survivor because I've been itching to reread that one. But in the meantime, you got to go check out our other two feeds. Season 2, No Limits, Brad Thor Podcast, Scott Harvath Podcast, sorry. Reading a lot of Brad Thor. Hidden Order is a current novel we're on. Gearing up for Shadow of Doubt coming out this summer. And then we have a whole host of other books. I don't have the read list in front of me. For the Mitch Rapp Pod, the Thriller Podcast, our Season 3 and beyond. Go check out those feeds coming at you roughly once a week.
And Chris, since this is where you thank our patrons, let's put in a plug for our newest patron, Adam K. Adam K. from across the pond over in England. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being our newest special agent. And just in case we overlooked you, Jason C. as well, our newest special operator. Really glad to see you guys getting involved with the patron community. Hope you're enjoying chatting us in the group chat. We've got a patron-only group chat going on. We even did our vote for the next patron book club book. We are going to read The Kill Artist by Daniel Silva. So listen for us to squeeze that into the reading list down the road. And if you want to be part of this amazing group of thriller readers, go ahead and sign up at thrillerpod.com. Just click on the Patreon tab and we'd love to see you over there. So thank you, Adam and Jason C. Thanks for joining up.
Yes, thank you and welcome to the family. All right, well, let me thank the rest of our patrons, our other special operator, Sherry F., our special agents, Ben, Daryl, Kevin, George, Matt, Don, Peggy, and Mark. Please subscribe, rate, and review using your favorite podcasting platform. You can find us at thrillerpod.com or on Twitter and Instagram at thrillerpodcast. And as always, just let Mitch be Mitch. Just a disclaimer, this podcast is not affiliated with Vince Flynn, Kyle Mills, or Simon & Schuster, but thank you to them for bringing us the wonderful world of rap. And the music soundtrack is Guerrilla Tactics by Raphael Crux.